on ESPN Plus alongside Hercules Gomez. I am Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you on what is our final show here in the United States before we head to Qatar. Herc, what are you wearing over there?
This is a commemorative shirt of the...
Well, commemorating what?
The first championship of the LA Galaxy, which I was a very small part of. I was 19 years old. I wasn't really a part of it. I was just happy enough to be on the roster. But the very first one, and they invited all these players from that 2002 team to, what game was it? A game versus, who did they play? I don't even know who they played. It doesn't matter who they played.
Right. It was all about the halftime show and honoring the 2002
pre,
team.
Pre-half and post. That's how. But 20 years, can you believe that? It's crazy.
Very cool. Very cool Galaxy gear. I got my Louisville City represented here of the USL Championship. We'll be talking about them a little bit later in the show. As we mentioned, Tuesday we head to Qatar. Football America is live every single day, Herc. 4 p.m. Eastern time with a few exceptions on ESPN+. And of course, if you want to listen to the show, you can listen to it in podcast form as well. Lots coming up. We had a huge win on Sunday, Herc, for the U.S. Women's National Team. The Canadian roster is out for the World Cup. And we have some Americans doing some damage as the club season closes ahead of the World Cup. But we got to start with the big news Monday out of Mexico as Tata Martino has dropped his 26-player list. Big news, not a big surprise. Raul Jimenez is in, that despite the fact that he hasn't played in almost 3 months. As we look at the goalies, Memo Ochoa, your starter, heading to his fifth World Cup. Cota and Talavera, the backups. Néstor Araujo, Jesús Gallardo, Gerardo Arteaga, Héctor Moreno, Jorge Sánchez, Johan Vázquez, César Montes, and Kevin Álvarez, your back line, a back line that features three European-based players. Much more European influence in the midfield, Eric Gutierrez, Orbelín Pineda, to name a few, alongside Héctor Herrera, Charlie Rodríguez, Andrés Guardado, Piojo Alvarado, Edson Álvarez, Luis Chávez, Uriel Antuna, and Luis Romo. And then up top, the big guns, Chucky Lozano, Rogelio Funes Mori, Henry Martin, the aforementioned Raul Jimenez, and Alexis Vega. Well, since we had some Chivas players on the Mexican national team, if things go south, we'll know who to blame. What about the final cuts, guys? Those who didn't make it, the snubs. Diego Lainez, the 22-year-old winger, on that list for sure. He's been on loan at Braga from Real Betis this season. He's had some highlights with the national team. Got a goal, of course, against the United States in the Nations League, but minutes have been tough to come by for Lainez at the club level. Also left off the 26-player list, although a potential injury replacement for Raul Jimenez, is Santiago Jimenez, the 21-year-old striker who moved from Cruz Azul to Feyenoord earlier this year. El Bebote, the joint top scorer in the Europa League. Somewhere, a tattoo artist just lost some business. For more on that, we're thrilled to welcome into the show Mauricio Pedrosa. For those who don't know, Mau, give us the quick story with you, the tattoo, and Santiago Jimenez. What was the bet?
So, great to be on Football Americas again, you guys. On Football Americas and on Ahora o Nunca, when the whole hype about Santiago Jimenez was reaching its highest point, I told everyone, he's not going to start. Herc was saying, kept saying, he's going to be a start for this team. And said, I will bet you that if he indeed starts a game for the Mexican national team in Qatar, I will get a tattoo with his nickname, El Bebote. I even told Santiago Jimenez that I was going to get it. I asked him, where should I get it? So he even jumped on the bet. I was right. Not only he's not going to start, he's not going to be a part of the roster. So on that side, it's a good day for me because I'm
not
going to
get any more ink. No more ink for Mau. What a disappointment for the tattoo parlors all across Los Angeles. So let's talk about Diego Lainez, Mau. Mistake for Tata Martino to leave him at home?
Yeah, this is the biggest mistake he has made in the 3.5 years that he has been the Mexican national team manager. And here is why. Because this is the biggest contradiction that we've gotten from Gerardo Martino in his tenure. Over the years, over this 3.5 years, Gerardo Martino has made it very, very clear that the player that he trusts the most, whenever you have to change the pace, the dynamic of a game, the player that he trusts the most is Diego Lainez. And for the biggest competition, regardless of the minutes that he sees or doesn't see with his club, He's leaving him out of the World Cup. I cannot buy the argument that Tata Martino's trying to sell that sadly Diego Lainez doesn't have enough minutes, because when he didn't have any minutes with Betis, he was still calling him up. Not only that, he was giving him valuable minutes for the Mexican national team. So at this point, and even Tata Martino has said this, there is no other player who has had a bigger impact coming off the bench in the last 3.5 years than Diego Lainez. So in my book, this is the biggest mistake Gerardo Martino has made so far.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? If you go back to that graphic, it shows that he's a top five player in all the stats for the Mexican national team, except for minutes played under Tata Martino, where he has the fewest out of any player. So it goes to show you how productive he is in the limited amount of time. Now, look at this. Fewest minutes, 642, but everything else, he's top five on the team. That is insane to me. He says that he's not playing right now, that he can't justify a call-up because he's not playing. How do you justify Rogelio Funes Mori, who wasn't playing? How do you justify Raul Jimenez? Newsflash, Diego Lainez has more goals, more assists in the last month than Raul Jimenez, who most likely, if it will be the starting nine for the Mexican national team. Diego Lainez versus the U.S. men's national team in the CONCACAF Nations League final. Almost retired Tim Ream. Tim Ream, who today is on that flight for the U.S. men's national team, captain of Fulham, almost retired him, scored a goal in that final. Comes off the bench against Panama, in an Azteca, draws a penalty kick to win the game. Costa Rica does the same thing. This is who he is off the bench. And Tata Martino, as Majo has said, has stated it over and over and over again. He's a different player coming off the bench. So in my eyes, he's the first player off the bench. He's player number 12. Why isn't he on the list?
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. Go ahead, Mal.
Yeah, I was going to say one last thing. This is obviously not confirmed, but it was said that Diego Lainez was competing against El Piojo Alvarado for that final spot, the 26th spot in the national team roster. In no world, in no parallel world, in no Marvel world, Piojo Alvarado is a better player than Diego Lainez. In no galaxy has El Piojo Alvarado had a bigger impact in the national team than Diego Lainez. And what concerns me the most, and we'll talk about this when we touch on Santiago Jimenez's topic, how can this affect a player in the future? He's already had to deal with the fact that he doesn't play much. Now, when we all thought he was a safe bet to be on the roster, how does this affect his motivation moving forward? Big, big concern, big, big disappointment for not having Diego Lainez in Qatar.
Bad for the team, bad for the player, I think bad for the future of Mexican football, right? This was a joven promesa. This is a guy who Mexican football was really high on, was really counting on. A World Cup could have relaunched his career, and this is definitely a player that needs that. So for me, it's a missed opportunity there. And to the point that you guys are making, what other player has this profile, right? You have other players who can come off the bench and give you speed. You have other players who can come off the bench, and we'll talk about them in a second, who are maybe final third connective players, can make an assist, can score a goal. But one-on-one specialists, I don't think that exists on this current Mexican roster. So to not have Lainez go, not only are you leaving a good player off, you don't have anything else like him. Mal, real quick, do you think it's the end of the road for Lainez? Do you think this is it?
No, I don't think so. I think he has a great mentality. I think he can bounce back. I want the people that manage his career to understand that he has to find a place where he's a starter, where he's an important part of a club.
If that, is that place in Europe or
soon,
Mexico?
At this point, it doesn't matter. At this point, it doesn't matter. If he has to come back and play in Mexico, then so be it. So be it. But he has to play if he wants to have the career that we all believe he can have.
All right, so it won't be Diego Lainez. Let's get into the other options to be that first attacking player off the bench. Let's stay away from the number nines. We're thinking more wide players, maybe central attacking midfielders. There you see the options. Herc, I'll start with you here. Oh, no, I'll start with Mal. Mal, who is your best attacking option off the bench if Tata Martino needs a goal late in a World Cup game?
Uriel Antuna. He's a playmaker, and under Gerardo Martino, under that system, He has shined. He has been fantastic. I even tweeted the other day when Mexico was playing Iraq, and I know Iraq is no parameter to make up our minds if a player is good or not, but for some reason, whenever he has the jersey of the Mexican national team on, he transforms himself in this amazing player. He has proven it already. I thought he actually had a very, very solid season at the club level. I hope that translates at the national team level, but from what we've seen so far, it has to be him. If it's not going to be Diego Lainez and we need a substitution for either Chucky Lozano or Alexis Vega, number one option has to be Uriel Antuna because he has done it in the past under Tata Martino.
Herc?
I'm just shocked that Mouse turned over a new leaf on Uriel Antuna, and he's
amazing is un poco exagerado. Amazing,
but he's absolutely right. I mean, there are few players who transform themselves when they put the green jersey on, and there's a cape in the background, you know, and the silhouette.
Oh my
but that,
goodness.
That's what it is. Look at the numbers. Look, if you talk Diego Lainez, Alexis Vega.
Watch the games. Don't look at the numbers. Watch the game.
No, Seb, this is a numbers game. What can you do for me? And he's done it for Tata. You look at his stats, 10 goals, 10 assists in under 2,000 minutes for Tata Martino. I mean, the unofficial games, okay, the friendlies, he doesn't do his damage in those. He does them in the Nations League, he does them in World Cup qualifying, he does them in Gold Cup, official games. He transforms himself, and say what you will, but there's something to be said about that. And I agree, the first substitution has to be Uriel Antuna, because every game we've seen him play, when everyone's talking about Diego Lainez has to be the man at the Olympic level in Tokyo, it ended up being Uriel Antuna who outshined him. This player, for whatever reason, the green shirt comes on, he comes on.
I'm not picking on Tuna. I think we all agree Alvarado's the last guy on this list, right? The last of the three that either of the three of us are putting in the game. I'm going to go with Orbelin Pineda, okay? I'm going with Orbelin for a few reasons. One, he's playing every week at a decent level. I'm not going to pretend I'm some Greek league expert, but he's playing every single week. He's scoring goals, not recently, but he scored some goals early in the season, so he's got that element to his game. I like what he can do in terms of connecting in the final third. He doesn't just have that one asset to his game, which I think is the case for both Piojo and Antuna, just their speed. I like Orbelin for another reason as well, and it's something Hercules Gomez said on this show. Remember how much, Herc, you talked about the MLS players suffering for not playing games. What about the Liga MX guys? What's it going to be, like a month for Antuna, 5 weeks for Alvarado?
A little over three weeks.
Okay, well, Pineda's coming in hot. He's coming in perfect European rhythm. Isn't that worth something here, Herc?
It's worth a lot, Seb. And also, one thing to your credit, your point right here, Orbelin Pineda is like one of these Swiss Army knives you can use in so many different situations. You need somebody in the midfield, Orbelin Pineda. You need somebody out wide, Orbelin Pineda. You need somebody as an eight, Orbelin Pineda. Double pivot, Orbelin Pineda. He fixes a lot of holes for you.
All right, let's get back to the forwards, because that's what everybody wants to talk about. The question here has the F word in it, a four-letter F word. And I hate this word. Fair. Is it not fair for Tata Martino to take Santi Jimenez to the World Cup? Now, what do you say?
It is not fair, but roster construction is not based on fairness. Mm. Fairness is not an element in which a manager will make a decision to include or not to include a player. It is not fair for Santiago Jimenez to not be a part of this team. But the more I think about it, the more I get it, the more I want to understand it. And here is why. Either Santiago Jimenez, if Santiago Jimenez is a part of this team, chances are he will barely see any minutes. Option number one seems to be Henry Martin. Option number two, no doubt, it is Rogelio Funes Mori. Although I think there's a big chance that Rogelio Funes Mori will start against Poland Tuesday, I mean. I think there's a big, big chance. So at this point, I feel like if we're going to fight about the third option, doesn't really make any sense. The only argument that I'm trying to sell right here is Something that we heard from Juan Carlos Osorio. Santiago Jimenez will be the number nine of the Mexican national team for the foreseeable future. There was a justification for including him in a 26-man roster, only that he experiences what it's like to be a part of a Mexican national team in the World Cup. That's my point. Now, is it fair? No, it's not fair. But I don't think managers use fairness as an element for considering who's in and who's out.
Injusticia. Injusticia, it's not fair. And you saying you don't even want to argue because he's going to be the fourth forward? You just argued for Diego Lainez, who's going to be the 26th man on the roster. Listen.
That's different.
Listen, Mauricio Imai, our colleague at ESPN Deportes, is reporting that Santiago Jimenez, El Bebote, is the only player on the roster to get two phone calls to his camp. One, Tata Martino and that coaching staff. Two, Santiago Jimenez. And then another one, Jaime Ordiales, the sporting director, to his father to explain the decision. That's how unfair this is. They needed two phone calls to try to explain this because nobody can explain it. One forward couldn't even lift his leg during a warm-up. His club team got so angry, they sent him back to England to check on him. Another forward was injured all season in Rogelio Funes Mori, and when he's played with the Mexican national team, has not been any good. The other forward, Henry Martin, was very good in Liga MX, which ended 3 weeks ago. He's the leading goal scorer of the Europa League. He's got a moment right now, and he can offer you something in the future. It's so unjust. Injusticia, injusticia, injusticia. That's why you got two phone calls.
See, I think Funes Mori over Santi Jimenez is not fair. Mal, go on, quickly.
All right, real quick. This is how unfair it is. The argument that Tata Martino was giving for not calling him up is that he doesn't see a lot of minutes with Feyenoord. What did Feyenoord did over the weekend? They started Santiago Jimenez as to say to Gerardo Martino, here he is.
There you go.
He can start for us. It is very, very unfair. Even his club knows that. But Tata Martino has this sort of commitment to Raul Jimenez in which he was going to wait until the last minute to include him. Now, was there a scenario in which you could take four center forwards, four nines? I would say there is with a 26-man roster. That's why this is even more unfair that Santiago Jimenez is not a part of this team.
He goes to Europe. He's co-joint top scorer, right, of Europa League. Like, that should be enough to get him in. And then think about what Funes Mori has or hasn't done. Played 8 games in World Cup qualifying, over 400 minutes, 1 goal. Funes Mori has had the chances that Jimenez hasn't had. And Funes Mori, like, to me, never, ever took advantage of it. And even if you go off the Liga MX numbers, he had, okay, fair enough. He had what, 4 goals this season once he returned from injury?
No, but that's what I'm saying, and he's coming off an injury. I'm adding to what you're saying. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 4 goals for Funes Mori this season. Santiago Jimenez had 5. I would say he played half the season. He didn't even play that. He had played 5 games in the Mexican League.
So I wonder what data
we're using here. I wonder what's the tiebreaker that in any way finds Funes Mori ahead of Jimenez. All right. Let's choose between the two snubs. Who will be missed more, Mauricio Pedrosa, in your opinion? Santiago Jimenez
Diego Lainez? Oh, sorry. I jumped ahead because...
Well, it was so obvious.
You and I, Steph, are the founding members of the Diego Lainez fan club. But, I mean, the answer is truly simple. Diego Lainez has been an important part of the Mexican national team for the past 3 years. He has made an impact on the team. He is the first sub. Santiago Jimenez is not yet at that level. And I honestly believe there will come a time during the World Cup in which Gerardo Martino will turn to his bench and go, oh, made a mistake. I was good. This was the right situation for Diego Lainez. He's not right here. I'm so tonto. I'm so dumb. And that might not be the case with Santiago Jimenez because he will have either Henry Martin, Rogelio Funes Mori, or even Raul Jimenez. No doubt is Diego Lainez. He will be missed.
Producer Rafa, I need a gif of that right there, please. Yes. While I do agree that it's going to be Diego Lainez, can I add this, though, a little food for thought? And you have to realize this. When it's a Summer World Cup, when you go to the World Cup as a player, you end your season, you have a whole 3 weeks, maybe even longer, for a camp. to get yourself going with your teammates. Here you don't. So form is absolutely necessary. So while you have Raul Jimenez, who's not played, Rogelio Funes Mori, who's not played, and Henry Martin, who's not played, you have a nine in Santiago Jimenez, El Bebote, that's playing and playing at a high level. That could be something that Tata Martino will miss and can it can be considered a huge mistake come down the road.
Yeah, if we're asking who the bigger snub is, I think it's pretty clear it's Jimenez, right? But we didn't word the question that way. We say who will be missed more, and I think it's pretty clearly Linus for the reasons that you guys state. Mexico always needs that guy off the bench, right? You always need that. I always go back to the Cabrito Arellano back in 1998, that desequilibrante player who can break down an opposing team. Clearly Mexico missing Diego Linus, missing Santiago Jimenez. And guys, I'm just thinking about 2026. And I know Tata Martino's not thinking about it, but I have regrets when I see both of these guys will be missing the 2022 World Cup. As you guys mentioned, Raul Jimenez facing a race against the clock to get healthy. So a health update on Jimenez should be a good thing. Let's hear from Julian Lopetegui, his new manager at Wolves in the Premier League.
I have sent messages with him. I have spoke with Raul about his situation with the national team, with Mexico, and that I am worried about him because he doesn't play any minute in with his team, his Wolves, and now I am worried because we need all, but we need Raul fit and in the best version, and I hope that he's going to come back here in this way, because the most important thing for me is no, okay, I respect a lot all the situation, is no the World Cup, it works. So we have to defend our aims, and I have spoke with him, with of course with all the respect of the decision of the player and the decision of the coach. But above all for me is Wolves.
Speaking of versions of Raul Jimenez, is this version, Mao, who hasn't seen the field in, what, 10 or 12 weeks, worth the wait for the Mexican national team?
Not for me. I don't think so. Because even if he hadn't had this very, very tough injury that he's trying to recover from, I don't think there was a clear-cut evidence that he should have been the starter for the Mexican national team. Even without this injury, I believe there was controversy or a competition for who should start against Poland, because he hasn't been any good in the last year and a half. And that's just the reality of the matter. Raul Jimenez, after his very, very tragic accident with David Luiz, has truly struggled to recover, not only to get to the form that he was before the accident, anywhere near that. So now that he not only was not at his best form, but he's suffering from a very, very tough injury, I believe it's a waste of time. And I'll wrap by saying this. Someone inside the national team told me this. If things go south, if he tries to force things, the risk of having to go through surgery after the World Cup and missing the rest of the season with his club is high. But he knows this, the manager knows this, and they're going to put all the eggs in the World Cup basket regardless of the risks of what might happen if things, and I knock on wood, go south with this injury.
That's the reality of things, is since the unfortunate incident of Raul Jimenez and David Luiz, he's a shell of himself. Of that form, for 18 months, where he was considered one of the best strikers in the Premier League, essentially one of the best strikers in the world, but his career has only been those 18 months where he's been at that level. Before and after, he's not. It's not been world-class type of player level. The last time that Raul Jimenez scored a non-penalty kick goal for the national team, 2020, 2 years ago. The last time he had an assist for him, almost around the same time. Now, I've got in front of me odds for Golden Boot at the World Cup. Raul Jimenez plus 8,000, okay? Unless he's planning to
score. Better be a lot of penalties.
All penalty kicks, that's not going to happen because that's the version that he has shown us. And Mao is right. There were serious doubts whether he should be the starting nine. And Tata Martino, to clarify those doubts, said he's looking for different things out of his nine, not so much a goal-scoring presence from his nine. So I agree with Mau here. We've not seen the best version of Raul Jimenez. We may not see it this World Cup. And if he is there, is to play, it's because Tata Martino's thinking maybe he can help him in the back end of the group phase, and if and only that.
Yeah. One thing that Mau says that stuck with me is he's not anywhere near that. If he was close to the player that he was pre-skull fracture, you would be this would not be a question. Of course he would be worth the wait. But Mau, as you say it, he's not anywhere close. And I think you talk about the biggest mistakes in Tata Martino's time in charge of the Mexican national team, leaving Diego Lainez off. I think his stubbornness here with Raul Jimenez, his unwillingness to let go of the player that Jimenez was before the injury, may go in the books as the biggest mistake of them all. Because one, he's going to end up maybe counting on Jimenez and wasting a roster spot for the World Cup. But imagine all those qualifiers, all those other opportunities that were wasted on Jimenez, where you could have been giving him to, I don't know, a guy like Santiago Jimenez, so then he could prove that he was worthy of a spot at this World Cup. There were so many minutes wasted waiting on Raul Jimenez to come back, and it just never, ever happened. And that, to me, is on Tata Martino. And if I had to sacrifice Raul for Santi at this point, as a fan, and you're asking me who I think gives Mexico a better chance to win, who's a more goal-dangerous player, I'm putting Santiago Jimenez way ahead of Raul Jimenez on that list. Let's talk some history now. Because there's some significant history surrounding this Mexican national team. Not just Andres Guardado, but Memo Ochoa are both heading to their fifth World Cups. They join the famed Tota Carvajal, legendary goalie of the 50s and 60s, and Rafa Márquez is previous Mexican players to get to five World Cups. Of course, Márquez doing it in 2018 in Russia. Mau, it's kind of an odd statistical anomaly. Is this good or bad for Mexican soccer?
It is bad for Mexican soccer. And I'm sorry to become the party pooper here, but I mean, here's the fact. Here's the fact. When a player like Guillermo Ochoa and a player like Andres Guardado reach the fifth World Cup, it means that Mexican soccer was unable to come up with more talent to compete for that spot. Because this is not Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, who will also play their fifth World Cup. But we are talking about two of the best players in the history. Definitely the two best players of, I was going to say, their generation. But for many generations, that's not the case with Guillermo Ochoa and Andres Guardado. I think it's not great news, because it means that you're not developing talent that can compete for those spots.
Yeah, that's the issue at hand here, right? You don't see countries like France, you don't see countries, world powerhouses, that have this type of player that are mainstays for five World Cups, because the talent is so good at such a young level that's pushing out the veteran talent. That's not the case here. It's great for Guardado and for Guillermo Ochoa. Like, what an accomplishment, five World Cups. I mean, not many players can say that, but when a country already has four, it goes to show you just how long in the tooth it is and how much it hangs on to those heroes, to those idols, and it can't let them go. And how much it's not developing, because they do a great job of winning youth tournaments, but that doesn't mean you develop youth players. It doesn't mean you develop good professionals, because after the U17s, heading into the U23s, those players go on to their club, and they don't play anymore. Zero players under 23 years of age in the 2022 squad. That blows my mind.
That's bad. Bad. Yeah.
How big an issue is that, Herc? Are we under maybe stating the value of experience? Won't Mexico, being one of the oldest teams in the tournament, won't that benefit them somehow?
I guess they won't get as nervous. I mean, if you were an older French team, I guess they wouldn't get as nervous. But if you're a team that's never won anything, I mean, it's great to go on seven straight World Cups into the next round, but Mexico goes on to the next round and loses, it's going to be un fracaso total. That's not going to be a successful tournament. It's going to be quinto partido for them. And I've said it, and I'll say it again, Seb, the World Cup is a young man's tournament. Mm-hmm. You're going to play three games in 9-10 days. You have to be physically fit, mentally fit. You have to be ready for whatever rolls along, and you're going to have to be deep. This Mexican squad is talented, yes. Technically talented, tactically, they got some very good players. But they're very long in the tooth. And one injury to a big player or fatigue comes in or whatever the case may be, and you're going to really get tested there.
All right, so there we have it. Memo and Ochoa also, and Andres Guardado heading to their fifth World Cup. Quickly, Mal, last word to you.
Real quick, this means that when the World Cup is played in Mexico and in the U.S. in 2026, there will be zero players, 26 or younger, with World Cup experience. Mm. And that's a problem. Oof.
We told you. Tata Martino may care about this version of the Mexican national team, but I don't think he cares too much about future versions of El Tri. Mauricio Pedrosa, thanks as always for the time. We will talk to you from Qatar.
We'll be watching. Proud of the work you've done with Football Americas. Enjoy Qatar, and I'll be rooting for you guys. Safe travels.
My man.
There he is, Mao. One of our very, very best friends here on Football Americas. Catch him over on Aranuka.
Colleague. He's a colleague.
With her. Let's run it back. El Tri style. Chucky Lozano with an assist in his second straight game, Herc.
You know, I got in a few of those assists. Those were always my favorite assists. Just give it to him. And then look, it's a bad touch, but he cleans it up nicely. I'll take that.
Napoli beating Udinese by a final score of 3-2. Chucky started, played 60 minutes. His third assist of the season in Serie A. Napoli, by the way, 8 points clear of second place. From Italy to Belgium, Genk, Gerardo Arteaga, the left back, scoring in the 53rd minute. And 21 minutes later, Herky got sent off.
I don't affect him for the World Cup, though.
No.
You know how many times he scored that exact same goal, though? He's got two this season.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ricardo Pepi kept off the plane to Qatar, but not kept off the score sheet this weekend. Pepi with his sixth Eredivisie goal of the season. It came on Sunday as Groningen fell 3-2, Herc, against Fortuna Sittard.
It's a good goal. Takes it with the right foot, which is not too common here. Most strikers take it with the left foot here. He opens up the body. Nice finish near post. Keeper going the opposite way. He's just feeling it right now.
3 days after the disappointments of being left off the team. Here's Pepi after the game.
You weren't selected for the U.S. men's national team. Was that a blow as well?
Yeah, you know, disappointing because, you know, I felt like I gave myself the best opportunities to be in the World Cup roster. You know, I felt like I had a chance, but, you know, also not disappointing at the same time because, like I said, I did my thing. I went out there, you know, I played many minutes, you know, I scored my goals. So, you know, I'm really happy with that situation, you know, and at the end of the day, it's a coach's decision that I can't control.
Maybe a fair question for you to ask to the coach of the U.S. men's national team. What's there more to do?
Like you said, it can be a question, but, you know, after he told me that I wasn't in the selection, then I just had to listen to what he said, and I didn't really ask any questions. You know, I feel like once he told me, I wanted to flip the page as soon as possible and just focus on the game now. And, you know, I can't keep thinking about why I didn't make it or why I did.
Pepi post-game there, Herc. Is he sending a message to Greg Berhalter?
Yeah, when he said that I just listened, I didn't have any questions, that speaks to me of somebody who's a bit angry, a bit chip on their shoulder, in a good way, the mentality. I'll tell you a very quick story. I was a player for the LA Galaxy in 2007, for that offseason, entering 2007, and I got a phone call from the LA Galaxy front office saying Alexi Lawes, the general manager, wanted to see me. I show up to Alexi's to his office, and Alexi thanked me for everything I had done for the LA Galaxy and informed me that I had been traded to the Colorado Rapids. I got up, shook his hand, said thank you, and I walked out. Years later, we're working together now in this business model, on this side of the media, or this side of the coin, I should say, and he asked me about that. And he's like, you know, in all my time working as a GM, you're the only player that never asked me why, never got upset. And why is that? And I asked him, would it have changed your mind? He said, no. And I said, well, there you go. I wanted to be somewhere I was wanted as well. Same mentality right here, Ricardo Pepi. Ricardo Pepi wants to be where he is valued. I think he's angry, but he's using it to fuel him, and that's a great thing.
So this interview was over the weekend before the rosters, you know, officially have to be finalized, right? November 14th is the day today, Monday, that they're actually due. So maybe he's thinking, and Greg Berhalter did say that there were some guys on standby. Another goal on the weekend, maybe somebody else gets hurt, his door would open. Obviously, that didn't happen. As far as sending a message to Berhalter, though, is there any message like left for him to send? He made the move to Augsburg, which we're to understand was recommended by the national team and the staff. Then he goes to Groningen. Greg Berhalter says, hey, buddy, you got to dominate there. He's clearly done that.
Listen,
and Greg Berhalter on the team. So what's there left to say if you're Pepi?
Greg Berhalter called him in when he wasn't scoring goals. You would assume when he is scoring goals, you would assume when there was a challenge ahead of him and he needed to take advantage of, and he did take advantage of it, he would be there. And that's not the case. So what else can he do?
All right, so he's not on the U.S. team, Herc. But what about this? Because if you remember, not all that long ago, there was a choice for Ricardo Pepi. Choose the United States or choose Mexico. Would he have had any shot at making the Mexican national team roster for this World Cup as a number nine?
I don't believe so. I don't believe he would have made the Mexican national team as a nine. Not because it's unjust, but because I think Tata Martino looks for certain characteristics out of his nine. And we saw Santiago Jimenez right now. The same thing happened to him, you know? And you know how I feel about Santiago Jimenez. And you once asked me about the two and who I rate more. I think Ricardo Pepi's a very good forward. Is he the forward for a team like the Mexican national team that probably asks a lot more of his nine instead of just scoring goals? No, probably not.
I mean, is it just down to that, or can we just say he's not better than any of the other forwards in the pool for Mexico? Like, wow. Would he get in? We put Raul Jimenez aside. Would he get in over Santiago Jimenez? No, you've said Jimenez is better. Would he get in over Henry Martin?
Yeah. I think,
really?
In my eyes, I think he's a better player than
really?
Martin. Yes. One plays in Liga MX, the other plays in the Eredivisie, and he played in the Bundesliga. And at 19 years of age, he was sold for 20 million.
I mean, hardly played in the Bundesliga.
Well, whatever the case may be, I think there are levels to it. And I respect Henry
so
and everything he's
Pepe's
done.
So you think Pepi's good enough to make the Mexican roster? You just think it's more of a, he doesn't fit what Tata wants in the number nine?
Correct.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
You don't.
No.
You value Liga MX too highly.
I think Henry Martin
been your
over
hero
Pepi.
If I was older
Henry
and you got
Martin
to watch
over
him
Pepi.
I was, yeah.
I think Henry Martin's a better forward, more likely
goodness.
To score than Ricardo Pepi. Yes. Correct. Did you notice this, Herc? I don't know if it's a coincidence or it's actually something much more important. There's not a single Mexican-American on either the U.S. or Mexico's World Cup roster.
Wow.
What do you make of that?
I don't know how far this would go back because I'm trying to think of Mexican-Americans on either roster. And there was one in, didn't go 2004 or 2018. There was 2014 was there. I'm trying to think. I'm sure there must have been. 2010, there was. 2006, somewhere along for Mexico. It just seems like this year where the Mexican-American player was more sought after and you had more of these fights over these players and more of these courtships, if you will, that there would have been not one but multiple players maybe on either side. You had about four called up for the Mexican national team that committed to the Mexican national team, a few to the U.S. men's national team, and nothing happened. And maybe that's circumstantial. Maybe it's Ricardo Pepi didn't make it because this happened, because Greg Berhalter values a certain type of player with a certain prototype of league and opponent that he is facing compared to the opponents that he will face in the World Cup. But it's a tough pill to swallow because for many years, I talk about how Mexican-Americans, not only in the sport, but in this country, feel like they're neither from here, neither from there. Ni de aquí, ni de allá. They feel caught in the middle, and it's a tough place to be. Well, here we are, no Mexican-Americans on either side. It almost justifies or strengthens, if you will, that argument, especially when you have the likes of Ricardo Pepi, Julián Araujo, you have Zendejas, who's a strong candidate, Brandon Vázquez, you have David Ochoa, Efraín Álvarez, whatever you may think of these players, there's some serious talent here, and to see them not be on either roster, it's a tough pill.
Yeah. You mentioned 2014, Omar Gonzalez on the team there, there was, yes, a Mexican-American on the squad back then. I think it's mostly circumstantial,
Nick Armando,
right?
Nick Armando as well, sorry.
Because there's like, each of these guys has a different story, both in terms of how they're playing right now, where they fit into the national team situation. If there is one line that I think we could draw between everybody, international football is becoming like a very condensed schedule, especially this cycle, Herc, right? With a year, maybe year plus that we lost to COVID, any player who is not in the pool for sure, right? If you're a manager of a team, you're saying, this guy is in my pool. I'm going to start planning for him. I'm going to start thinking about his role. If a guy is maybe in your pool, you don't look at him the same way until he commits. And so as these players wait to commit, I think it does maybe put them at a disadvantage when the national team managers are looking at other guys first and kind of developing those roles already in their minds. I'm not saying that it's anything unfair the coaches are doing, but you're a little bit late to the game if you have to pick between a side.
Yeah, and also when you pick between the side, you're picking with your heart, but you're also picking with your mind. Julián Araujo, who picked with his heart, and I think that's great. Maybe you think, like, Julián Araujo could have been on this U.S. men's national team squad. He couldn't have gotten into this roster. Things like that. And you just asked me about Ricardo Pepi.
Yeah.
Under a certain coach, he could have gotten into the Mexican roster. So I see what you're saying, but I just think anytime you give these coaches the option of saying, let me just cap them and get it over with, and we'll go from there. When you fast-track these players, a lot gets lost in that development.
Of the players that kind of fit this description, Herc, for me, Zendejas is the guy that you're like, wow, really? Like, he's not going, especially with the needs for Mexico at that position. Obviously, now we're getting reports. It looks like he is leaning towards the U.S., after the World Cup. But for me, from a Mexican standpoint, what a huge player that could have been, especially in light of the Tecatito injury.
It's huge for both sides. It's huge for Mexico if they do lose him, because he's a very talented player. That's really opened up a lot of eyes. And it's huge for the U.S. men's national team side, because a la Haji Wright, a la Luca De La Torre, these players that were part of that setup with Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie. Here's another one, Alejandro Zendejas. So that would be a huge addition to the U.S. men's national team.
All right, let's run it back with the U.S. men's national team, who were busy over the weekend. Josh Sargent, Herc, scoring his 9th goal of the season on Saturday, and it came against Zach Steffen.
Oh, no. Perfect touch. The touch right here, people think it's a little long. No, this is what you want if you're a forward. He's putting it into space for himself, finishes it off. My man is hot right now. 9 for the number 9.
Norwich lost the game, by the way. They fell 2-1 against Steffen's Middlesbrough. Also from the championship, worth noting, Daryl Dike back after a long injury layoff. Good news there. To the Premier League, Brendan Aaronson with his 2nd assist of the season as Leeds lost a barn burner 4-3 against Spurs on Saturday.
Yeah, look at this. Look how he fights for it, though. Just keeps fighting. Outside the foot, puts it up, and it's a good little finish. But it's his willingness to fight in the final third, stay active, go at defenders that creates things.
Classic Brendan Aaronson. Some might say vintage. Leeds 15th in the table at the break. Tyler Adams also involved in that game, and he was sent off, Herc, in the 87th minute.
Yeah, I don't mind seeing it. That's Tyler Adams. They're sending a message. Had a few choice words. I mean, he was knocking somebody out like the first 15, 30 seconds of the game. He was already like tackling somebody, telling them to get up. I love this thing from Tyler Adams. It's probably not the smartest play. He still maybe had a chance at it, but he'll get better for it.
Suspension doesn't carry it over to the World Cup. That's all that matters. Christian Pulisic, he came on at the half as Chelsea lost 1-0 against Newcastle. The big highlight for him actually right here, getting shoved by referee Robert Jones. What?
Man, my man Robert Jones pushed the right guy. He pushes anybody else. People are going to have an issue with it. Christian Pulisic just backed away. I get it. What are you going to do with the referee? But, oh, come on.
Christian Pulisic getting into it with the refs 7 days from the World Cup opener against Wales. Herc, is it something, nothing, or everything?
You know, I don't think it's something, nothing, or everything that he got into with the referee. I think it's something, nothing, or everything that we didn't see a reaction from it. I'll explain myself with it.
Good thing or bad thing? It's good that he didn't react, right? He's got to keep his cool.
I think it's everything that we know Christian Pulisic to be, and sometimes you'd like to change that. There are plenty of players, or plenty of pundits, fans, teammates of Landon Donovan that wish that sometimes Landon Donovan would have been a little bit more into the moment and emotional in the right way, right? Like, to think of harnessing that talent.
Is that important?
In the right way.
Come on, you're either a good player or you're not.
That's not true.
What do you want him to do? What's the appropriate response to a referee putting his hands on Christian Pulisic?
That's the worst thing I've ever heard about of athletes. You're either good or you're not good. That's not it. There's a huge mental part to this game. I've played with much more talented players that for whatever reason, after 1 year, 2 years, they're done. 3 years, right. They're done. Whatever the case may be, you keep going even though they're better players. This is a very good, talented player, and the issue with him has never been his talent. It's been mentally. It's been him being consistent. Now, somebody puts their hands on a Clint Dempsey. I don't care if it's a referee. What do you think is going to happen? Somebody puts their hands on any major player in today's game, a referee, and what do you think is going to happen? I'm not saying go physical altercation on him, but there's going to be a little bit more blood boiling. Sometimes you wish Christian Pulisic had that in him because he has the talent in him.
Hmm. All right. Interesting. Maybe questioning a little bit to the fire there for Christian Pulisic. I think if there's anybody who could benefit from like a refresh, a restart with everything that's going on at Chelsea, there's probably some frustration built up there.
Absolutely.
Right? It's him. So I always think that in these situations, it's a player who is very much primed. But when I say that, Herc, it's because I think that there's less pressure on Christian Pulisic when he's with the U.S. than when he's at Chelsea. And why I say that? Well, you see it, right? We saw the arrival videos, Christian Pulisic getting into camp. He's happy. He's a beloved figure in the U.S. camp. Do you think there's less pressure on him with the U.S., even though he is very clearly the guy for Greg Berhalter's team in a way that he's not with Chelsea?
I think he's starting to embrace that pressure because of what it means. And you said it perfectly, a fresh start. Now, Chelsea's over with. That is done. Get that out of your mind. Whether it's Thomas Tuchel, whether it's Graham Potter, whether it's referee shoving you, you have to concentrate on what is the World Cup, and you have to be somebody different. The great thing about a new scenario is you can reinvent yourself and you can be somebody different. He can be somebody different for the world at this World Cup. The way he's been a difference maker for the U.S. men's national team throughout his whole career. But that's exactly what he needs to do. And when I speak about that fire, I'm talking about this, the opportunity right now, today. Because it doesn't matter how little he played for Chelsea. If in this World Cup he can capitalize and he knows that he will play a lot in a team that values him, with a coach that values him, that can be the difference maker. That could be a game changer.
Herc, you know how EA, FIFA do their World Cup simulations every 4 years?
Sure.
They did the World Cup simulation this time around. They got the U.S. going to the quarterfinals. Christian Pulisic scoring 5 goals in 5 games. I'm just saying.
Pulisic scores 5 goals at the World Cup. Producer Beto's getting a tattoo. Left bumpy of Christian Pulisic.
All right, let's get to the news of the day surrounding this U.S. men's national team, who underwent their first full session in Qatar on Monday. 22 of the 26 players taking the field, although the whole team is now in Qatar. Al Gharafa Stadium is the U.S. training base. Temperatures at the beginning of the training session in the 80s. Let's hear more from Greg Berhalter.
Yeah, so we're gradually getting guys in, right? Today we have 22 of the 26 players. By tonight, we'll have all 26. But first impressions, talking to the guys, they like the facility, they like the hotel, and so it's a good sign. You know, we went to a lot of lengths to make it accommodating, to create the type of environment that the players are used to, and understanding that we want to be here for a long time, so we want to make it comfortable for them. Yeah, we've been talking to the team for the last 18 months about Qatar, about some social issues in Qatar, and we think it's important. Like wherever, you know, I think that you know, when we are on the world stage and we are in a venue like Qatar, it's important to bring awareness to these issues, and that's what Be the Change is about. You know, it's not just stateside that we want to bring attention to social issues. It's also abroad. And, you know, we recognize that Qatar has made strides and there has been a ton of progress, but there's still some work to do. And it's just about Be the Change basically represents everyone's individual opportunity to make change and to have change start with them. So I think it's appropriate that we have it here as well.
Perk, squad numbers are out for the U.S. men's national team. This a big deal? I feel like it is.
No, it's not a big deal.
No. What number were you?
I was the number 9 at the World Cup.
It's wow, not a big deal. I mean, that's a pretty big deal, bro. That's a pretty big deal.
It's not a big deal.
Who gets the number 9 this time around? Jesus Ferreira. Okay, yeah, all right. Yeah. That tells us something, I suppose.
Yeah. No, it really does. It goes by caps. So, you know, that's what they're. But Matt Turner, number 1, that's a pretty big deal.
There you go.
I think for a goalkeeper, being the number 1 is a big deal. So, yeah, there you go.
U.S. squad number set for Qatar 2022.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Canada has announced theirs. They did so on Sunday. First big headline, Alphonso Davies is in case anybody was wondering. Of course, dealing with that injury picked up while playing for Bayern Munich. There are some injury absences. Daniil Henry, Maxime Crépeau, to name a few. All told, there's 11 Major League Soccer players on this roster. Again, John Herdman's team is in Group F alongside Belgium, Croatia, and Morocco. Alphonso Davies Hurk is one of CONCACAF's big stars alongside Christian Pulisic, Chucky Lozano, Keylor Navas, just to name a few. Who do you think is under the most pressure to perform at the upcoming World Cup?
Alphonso Davies. Alphonso Davies is not only the poster child for Canadian soccer, Canadian football, he's the poster child for CONCACAF in general. There is no player in CONCACAF that could say, one, they're in the top 50 of ESPN's top 50, right? But two, that they're arguably in the top 3 in their position in the world. In the world, he's the only one. And when you think about the trajectory, refugee camp to Vancouver Whitecaps to Bayern Munich to learning a position in a matter of months and already excelling at said position and being one of the best in the world and being so young, the pressure is on Alphonso Davies. You think Canadian football, you're going to think Alphonso Davies. If Canada does anything of worth, it's because Alphonso Davies took them there. If they don't, it's because Alphonso Davies couldn't get them there. The same way, now, this doesn't mean talent, because when we talked about the most, or the best, I should say, U.S. men's national team player, many will say, well, Clint Dempsey could be in there. Landon Donovan carried the torch for so long for U.S. soccer, for so many years, inspired millions and millions.
I thought you just said you wanted more fire out of Landon Donovan.
Hold on. What is it? I'm telling you, okay? This is where U.S. soccer was at that moment. Alphonso Davies is doing the same, only he's got a fire hose right behind him. He's got a fire hose spraying on everything. Alphonso Davies, everything Canadian soccer, a huge attention light, a huge flashlight, if you will, on him and that team. And if they do anything, it's because of him.
You're going Alphonso Davies for the CONCACAF star under the most pressure to perform at the World Cup. I'm going different. I'm going Chucky Lozano because Mexico needs Chucky Lozano and they need him bad, Herc, right? I'm trying to think of Mexico's goal dangerous players, right? If we go back through all of qualifying, this Mexican national team did one thing. They dominated the ball, but they struggled to not just score, create chances. Now, Lozano was part of that, for sure. But I think what we're seeing now with Napoli is a very different Lozano than the one that we saw in World Cup qualifying. And I look around the rest of this Mexican attack, I don't see Herc. I don't see options as to who is going to create goals for Mexico. I look around the Canadian attack, I see guys like Kyle Larin, I see guys like Jonathan David, I see guys like Tejan Buchanan, and by the way, with Canada, I can also look back at their qualifying record. They've played without Davies and played in some big games. They beat the U.S. 2-0 without Alphonso Davies. So I think Canada can be okay if Davies doesn't have his best World Cup. If Lozano doesn't show up, Mexico's done nothing in this tournament.
Because they did in CONCACAF. They should be fine against Belgium and Croatia. You're right. really quickly, refresh my memory. Who's been
this
the best
player? This is the guy
player?
Who talks about Jesus.
Who's been
Pereira's
the best player?
Four goals against
who's
Granada.
Who's been the best player in the past two World Cups for Mexico?
Incongruente. Who's the best player last two World Cups for Mexico? Memo Ochoa. Most impactful player.
There we go. Then he will have to be again the best player for Mexico if they have a chance. If Mexico has a chance of advancing and going to the quinto partido, he will have to be. So he's under the most pressure. It's his final World Cup. He has to be the guy. He's under the most pressure because why is Chicharito Hernandez not there in the eyes of many? Well, he has something to do with it. Why all of a sudden was Mexico in the knockout rounds of the 2014 and 2018? Because of Memo Ochoa. He has to be the biggest player they have if Mexico is going to do something. It wasn't because of Chucky Lozano who scored a goal. Yes, very good goal, yes. But when you look at the importance of the players, and you said it yourself, all the good offensive moments in the 2018 World Cup, did you not say flow through the feet of Javier Hernandez? Not Chucky
That's
Lozano.
Right.
The best moments in the World Cup, the last two World Cups, are Memo Ochoa. He's the one under the most pressure.
Christian Pulisic, Keylor Navas, any thoughts on those two?
I think we've gone through the pressure of Christian Pulisic and maybe at a U.S. level, but under these four, no, probably not. And Keylor Navas, like, how much pressure can you be if you've already got into the promised land of 2014 World Cup and right now you're not a starter? I mean, qualifying for the World Cup for Costa Rica was a miracle in itself, and how they did in the second half of that World Cup qualifying schedule, I think they've done enough.
Tough group for Costa Rica as well in there with Spain, Germany, and Japan. Why don't we take a look, Kirk, at the odds to advance into the knockout rounds for the four teams that will represent CONCACAF at the upcoming World Cup. And look at that. According to the odds makers, the team with the best chance of making it to the knockout rounds, still Mexico, just slightly.
I agree.
Over the United States.
I agree.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. But the best chance to make it to the quinto partido, if they do get out of the knock or out of the group phase, I think goes to the U.S. Would you not agree?
Yep. As we've talked about many times on this show, the cruce, the potential round of 16 matchup, obviously a huge factor there. All right. From the U.S. men's national team and the rest of CONCACAF, the U.S. women's national team, who, Herc, were closing out their 2022 schedule against Germany on Sunday in New Jersey. 18 minutes in, Yula Brand gonna open the scoring for the Germans.
Ah, those unis are so sick. Like, ridiculous. Good left-footed finish. Goalkeeper doesn't see it in through traffic. Take the 1-0.
Germany up 1-0 into the second half. Looking to make it 2 here. Lina Magul 1-on-1. Alyssa Nair the stop.
Yeah, Alyssa Nair doing very, very good here. This touch right here, too big. She comes out, makes her pay for it.
Huge stop from Nair. Why? Because just a minute later, Sophia Smith gets into the box, Herc, and does this. 1-1.
Yeah, does that. But Germany, all sixes and sevens at the back. Just horrendous defending. Sophia Smith, she don't care. She'll take that.
The MVP on a roll. A few minutes after that, more from the Americans. Andy Sullivan, the long ball. Mallory Pugh in behind, 2-1.
Yeah, the commentator was going ape emoji after this goal, but I get it. The defending is atrocious again, in between two players, bounces way too many times, and then just a nice finish by Pugh.
U.S. comes back to win 2-1 as Alex Morgan celebrates her 200th cap. Here's some more post-game reaction from New Jersey.
Yeah, to get the win to end 2022 on a high was huge for us and for me and my 200th cap. Wanted nothing more than just a win. So obviously we had like kind of a rocky start to this game, and they were kind of, you know, started to dominate a little bit, win a lot of tackles. And I felt like in the second half we really came out just ready to compete and completely dominated end to end and had some incredible goals as well. I think it's important to just recognize that we did have really good moments the other night and that we were unlucky at times, that at times it also wasn't good enough. So I think it's seeing everything as a whole and not, you know, picking apart the bad. So just fine-tuning those improvements we needed to make and kind of staying course to the journey that we're on and not getting kind of off course due to maybe a narrative being written, because that's only going to increase as we get closer to the World Cup.
Burke, it's just a friendly. But how important was this year-ending win for the U.S. women?
It would have been the first time they lost four in a row in their history, so it's not just a friendly. Regardless of how Germany played or how many changes Germany had, I believe it was six or seven changes, a few big names off that list, it was still a very good German side that they needed to beat for their own good, for their own confidence, because I truly believe the rest of the world not only thinks they're catching up, but no longer fears the U.S. women's national team. So it would have been a huge message they would have sent to lose to Germany in home soil and four defeats in a row for a very young team. Now, it's one thing for the rest of the world to believe it, but when you start doubting yourself, that's a whole nother thing.
That's why this is so big for me, right? I think the ship has kind of sailed on the rest of the world, Hurt. I don't think the Germans, I don't think the English, I don't think the Spanish, I don't think the French are going to fear the Americans anymore. They're not going to have the U.S. that mental edge that they had in 2019. But for this U.S. team, many of whom have not proven it at the ultimate international level, to be able to avoid the historic four-game losing streak and beat Germany and do so in the manner in which they did, right? A brave comeback, I think, is huge, especially 8 months from a World Cup. There's some momentum now. There's something to go into the offseason. And as important as this is, Hurt, for the team, I think this game was so important for Mallory Pugh. She dominated this game, Hurt. She took over this game in a way that we have seen her do at the NWSL level and in starts and spurts at the international level. But she was the difference maker in that second half. Germany had no response for her. And so now that's the expectation. I'm sure for Vlad Goyenanovsky, he's going to say, hey, Mallory Pugh, I need that from you all the time. But also for Mallory Pugh, she now knows that she can dominate, not just domestically, but against the best international teams in the world. She's going to have to do that, Herc, if the U.S. are going to do well in Australia and New Zealand next summer.
Yeah, and if I could just add to Vlatko Andonovski and how important it is for him kind of regaining a lot of that confidence with a lot of the fans, a lot of the pundits, and maybe his own players, a lot of those decisions, especially in the midfield, have come back to kind of bite Vlatko and this U.S. women's national team. It was good to get that victory, like you said, now heading to a pair of friendlies coming soon.
Yeah, they got a couple games in January. Of course, kind of a scouting trip, if you will, as they go to New Zealand to play twice. All three group phase games for the U.S. women's national team will be in New Zealand. Speaking of Vlatko, Herc, I don't know if you heard this. It kind of came out in the post-match press conference on Sunday night. He's heading to Qatar, where he'll be helping the U.S. men's national team. Did you guys have, like, guest coaches when you were with the team at all?
A few, but he's going to go to Qatar to help scout, and I think this makes total sense. You know, they're all family. He's got a good soccer brain on him. Help scout the opponents, help scout future opponents. It's a very productive thing for all involved.
Yeah, we've heard from the Federation before that Vlatko and Berhalter have paired and worked together in the past. According to Glenn Crooks, who's on Sirius XMFC, Andonovsky, as you mentioned, will be part of the team of advanced scouts. So that'll be his primary role, helping the U.S. men in Qatar. All right, Herc, just a few more minutes on this edition of Football Americas. Let's go to some lower-tier football. Liga MX Expansión, the final, Atlante against Celaya. Second leg on Saturday, first leg was scoreless. 16 minutes in, Atlante 1-0 through Christian Bermudez.
Woo! El Hobbit? Is that El Hobbit Bermudez?
Wow, what a moment.
Unbelievable.
Where are they now? 47th minute. Acosta. Gael making it 1-1.
You know what I like about this? They're two of the, like, most historic, if you will, teams in Mexican soccer, of the most historic teams in Mexican football, I should say.
1-1 end of regulation. We go to extra time. Atlante forcing the own goal. Guillermo Allison off his rear.
Oh, no. Cruz Azulear for Allison. He took that with him. Oh, no. Off his heel. No, it is. Oh, no. What do you do there if you're the goalkeeper? Oh no, the Pompeian in. Oh no.
Atlante up 2-1. And then 3 minutes after that, they strike again. Cesar Gerardo Lopez Mesa to make it 3-1.
It's just so nice when you know you beat the goalkeeper and it's only just slide it in, put it in. Lift the trophy, Hobbit.
Atlante's first title since they won the Apertura back in 2007. defeating Pumas in the final. What about the second division in the United States? USL Championship final on Sunday. San Antonio hosting Louisville, who are my pick to win it all. Early on, penalty against Louisville. We're going to the spot. Mitchell Tainter misses, and Herky missed badly.
Yeah, ball don't lie. Ball don't lie. Dragged his leg. I didn't think it was a penalty kick.
Just before the half, another penalty for San Antonio. Lots of home cooking here.
Oh, that's a penalty.
Santiago Patiño steps up. Not going to miss this one. 1-0.
Roofs it. Nice and confident.
Second half. San Antonio looking for insurance. Samuel Adeniran. 2-0.
It's so difficult for a goalkeeper. They usually say two headers in the box results in a goal. There it is.
San Antonio heating up 6 minutes later.
Whoop! Whoop! Oh, no. Oh, no. Took him for a ride.
Beautiful move. Going to finish with Patiño, who's got a brace.
Oh, that touch right there by Patiño to bring the ball down with his chest. So silky. Oh, no, goalkeeper.
Louisville
is the loneliest number.
El gol del honor, Brian Ownby, to make it 3-1. But San Antonio, your USL Championship final winners, 3-1 over Louisville City. All right, so Herc, we just saw the finals for their respective second tiers in the United States and Mexico. Which country do you think has a better second tier?
I'm not even going to say country. I'm going to say the USL has a better second tier.
Okay.
It's just a reality. I mean, you look at the Liga de Expansión, and I understand both are closed systems. There's no pro rel. I understand how devastating that is to the grassroots and the ability to, if you will, develop new talent. Develop not only new talent on the player side, but maybe new aspiring talent in ownership groups, in front offices, et cetera, in fan bases. You look at Liga de Expansión, they're supposedly not closed. They still have pro rel for a select few. About four teams can be promoted if they've got a big enough stadium, if they've got, I don't know, all these crazy rules and regulations to get promoted. But all it's turned into is a Mexican graveyard for players that were once somewhat primetime players in Mexican football. We just saw El Javi Bermúdez on that list. At one time, he was a big player for Club America. Atlante, who at one time was played in the Club World Cup against Barcelona and started off winning against Pep Guardiola, Lionel Messi's Barcelona in the Club World Cup. That gave them a run for their money. You won't see cases like that because you won't have that. Now, on the USL side, you've got much better ownership groups. You've got better projected plans, new stadiums sprouting all the time, new franchises coming about. You can find franchises or potential franchise owners in Mexican football at that level because they don't want to come in to a system that they know means very little. And now USL is talking about its own 1 and 2 pro rel within their own USL. It's much more room for advancement, growth in the USL level on all levels. You're talking about growth from the ownership side, but also growth from the development side of the domestic player in the USL.
I don't think this is close, right?
No.
Like, we talk about how far USL Championship has come in just a few short years. It's a league that is really, really in a boom cycle right now. I'm so impressed. I mean, I think just to like 5-10 years ago, kind of what that league was. You know, Herc, you were in it, what, 10, 15, 20 years ago? So you can tell just the growth that's happened there. For me, something that's clear is we don't see the interest in expansion down in Mexico, right? I feel like on this show we do, what was the last one, Milwaukee? Like every month almost there's a new USL, whether it's Championship or League One, there's some new type of expansion happening. And that's great for USL. It's also great for American soccer because now we've got pro soccer, Herc, in all those cities, in all those markets. That's great for the game. It's also great for development. We see something we will never see, I don't think, in Liga MX Expansión. Selling players to
exactly.
Europe. Exactly. USL Championship's doing that right now, today, today.
USL has sold more Mexican players to Europe than La Liga Expansión will probably ever sell to Europe. Jonathan Gomez is in Europe because of USL.
Yeah.
They can't get their own players from Liga MX to Europe.
That's it. USL Championship. The winners, San Antonio FC, but props to Louisville, not just for sending the beautiful jersey.
I didn't get
anything. Great season,
San Antonio.
As well. Oh, well, there you go. San Antonio, you want to be on the right side of Football Americas? send a, what is it?
You know who sends stuff.
Medium? Large?
Large these days.
Large these days. Okay, large jersey for Hercules Gomez. One more bit of news, Herc, before we get out of here, because it just got dropped tonight. Ashlyn Harris, longtime goalie for the U.S. Women's National Team, is retiring at the age of 37. She is a two-time World Cup champion in 2015 and 2019. Congratulations to her, and her congratulations to you. You have made it through the American-based part of Football Americas in 2022. Our next show, Thursday from Doha, the capital of Qatar. Are you ready?
No.
No.
No. I can't do this.
Well, you got 48 hours to figure it out. 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, live from Doha, Football Americas. We'll see you then.